Hello and welcome to the podcast, support us by subscribing and sharing. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook and Threads. And if you really want to help out the podcast, you can donate to us on Patreon for just £3 a month to buy us a coffee or help us rent the movies. Now joining me as always, my partner in crime, but crime doesn't pay.
Excellent. Craig!
And staying out of trouble, it's your host Adam. You're listening to Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure. Adam and Craig's Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
What do you know of RoboCop?
Right, okay, so here we go. I watched and had RoboCop on VHS back when I was a kid.
Of course.
I didn't understand it.
Right, yeah. That's a really good, an observation, mate, because I watched this obviously quite young as well, and because this movie from 1987, this is very much an Uncle Aiden movie for me. This is a movie that I remember watching.
Nice,
over there.
Nice. This for me was a like Christmas Fair or Christmas Fete.
Okay.
I bought it for £1. I remember the movies that I bought at this Christmas Fete. One of them was RoboCop, and the other two was a double feature of Steven Seagal's Nico and Time to Kill.
Sweet.
I remember coming home, my dad genuinely looking and being like, not great choices.
Yeah, did you have that sort of, what's that? Not FOMO, but, kind of like almost when someone is at a restaurant and you order something and they order a completely different meal and theirs come and you're like, oh, fuck, I should have ordered that. Do you ever have that sort of like regret when you rented or bought a movie when you go like, oh, I could have bought something else?
With the restaurant thing, not so much. Because pretty much the only person I go out for dinner with is you. And we pretty much order the same thing.
Yeah, that's
thing.
True. We are a bit like America. Like that.
And my partner and I, when we go out for dinner, we share food.
Oh, you know? What? Share food? I do not know this concept.
Yeah, I'll order this, you'll order that. Do you want half of mine? I'll take half of yours. And then we...
That's outrageous.
Am I weird?
For me it is.
that's how we do, man. But I remember once... And I can tell you exactly when it was. I remember when I turned 18, I was old enough to just go to any movie I wanted by myself. And out in cinemas that fucking day was Judd Apatow's Funny People.
Right.
And Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, nice. So, as obviously a film buff, you want to go see Funny People, yes?
Yep. I made a bad fucking choice.
that's the one with Adam Sandler, isn't it?
Adam Sandler and Seth Rogen, other one's Inglourious Basterds, you know. And so I came out, and so like me and two other friends went to see Funny People, and then I think one of my friends' dads went to see Inglourious Basterds. I came out of Funny People like harumph, and he came out going, "Oh man, Inglourious Basterds! Wow, what a movie!" So they all then left, and I was like, "Fucking, I'm buying a ticket for Inglourious Basterds." And that was my first ever double feature.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever done double features because obviously in the zeitgeist at the moment is the Barbie Oppenheimer double featurette that people are making.
Or Oppenheimer if you want to do it correctly.
What did I say?
Oppenheimer.
That's how they say it in the movie.
It's not, is it? I haven't seen it.
Exactly. You'll have to find
it. I'm seeing it on Thursday when I'm doing it as a double feature with Barbie.
But getting back to your sort of original point about this movie and kind of not quite fully grasping or understanding it as a child and then rewatching it later as an adult, I think I found a lot of like the boardroom and the kind of like the yuppie business side of the movie quite boring because I was just like, just get to the fucking, I want to see RoboCop.
As a kid.
Blow shit up. Yeah. And then as I got older, I was like, oh, actually these plot points are integral to the story moving forward. And
that's it, isn't it? As a kid, you're like, guns and explosions and fucking look at the thing. And then you grow up and you're like, huh, shit, man, a narrative.
Yeah, you're like, fuck, there's an actual story here.
Saving Private Ryan is not all about the D-Day landings. But as a kid, my God, it ended after 30 minutes, that movie.
Well, if you watch or look at my YouTube history, it probably is. Like, there are certain movies where I just go, do you know what? I just need to watch the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan, and then I'm done. I'm good. I don't need the rest of the movie.
I got a question on that, but I'll go with the RoboCop thing first. There are bits in this film that I watched, I think, when I say maybe 8 or 9,
mm-hmm.
that I'm never going to forget.
Yeah.
That I'm never, out and out, it not haunts me, but I remember seeing it as an impressionable pre-double digits child and went, holy shit, they can do that?
It's almost a reason why there's an 18 rating on this movie.
Yeah, for sure. Now, Adam, here's my quiz to you. I'd probably say there are 3 moments in this film which I'm like, I'm never going to forget it.
Yes.
Name one of them. And to be frank, name the top one.
So I can imagine there might be like the Toxic Avenger.
It's the fucking the dude who gets fucking sludged into toxic waste.
Yeah,
For years, I've talked about RoboCop and gone, yeah, good movie, it's fine, whatever. Yeah. But holy shit, that bit with the dude who gets smashed by the toxic waste, that's amazing.
Yeah, I'd say one of the other ones, for me anyway, is when you first introduced it at 209, and then the guy, you know, it sort of malfunctions and shoots the guy. And if you've ever watched the kind of like the extended cut of RoboCop, it's insane how long he keeps getting shot for. It's like, it's gratuitous. You know what I mean, and it's just like, it's one of those movies where you kind of can really appreciate at the time, you know, like this was made, the practical and special effects, but also just the kind of out and out kind of like violence behind it as well. And it plays really well into this movie.
This ties in now nicely full circle to the thing I'm saying, like I just didn't understand it, because when I was a kid, I was like, yeah, the violence, shoot him up, fucking show me that guy got shot in the dick, that sort of thing.
We're going to talk a lot about that.
Well, we're going to talk about that, but it was the bit. So I think we talked about it a few months ago on the podcast where I did the trilogy, 1, 2, 3.
Oh yes. Well, this is what I was going to ask you. Is at some point maybe we venture into RoboCop and 2 and 3, but we'll get into all this. Just for the listener here, if you've never seen RoboCop before, it's about a dystopic and crime-ridden Detroit, and a terminally wounded cop returns to the force as a powerful cyborg, haunted by submerged memories. And just a quick one there, roll trailer.
We get the best of both worlds. The fastest reflexes modern technology has to offer, onboard computer-assisted memory, and a lifetime of on-the-street law enforcement programming. It is my great pleasure to present to you RoboCop.
This guy is really good.
He's not a guy, he's a machine.
All Detroit has a cancer. Cancer is crime.
Let the woman go. You are under arrest.
You better back up, pal.
Your move, creep.
What are your prime directives?
You have the right to remain silent. You have the right to an attorney.
What is this shit?
Anything you say may be used against you.
He's a cyborg, you idiot. He recorded every word you said.
You're dead. We killed you.
His memory's admissible as evidence.
You're gonna have to kill it.
Get a cop, for God's sake!
RoboCop, the future of law enforcement.
Just so, because obviously we're going to talk shitloads in the episode about this third.
What I like about that, sorry, is that usually I try and edit out nowadays your speaking guffaws. It's just the way that I'm going to have to... a human cyborg. If you'd have done it in the same cadence, it would have really helped me out. But no, fuck it.
Fuck it, we'll do it live.
Like Chris Rock.
Director... Paul Verhoeven. Where do we know that name, Craig?
Oh, my boy.
He's been on the show a few times.
Starship Troopers.
He has done Sharp. I'm really mumbling my... It's a Sunday. It's late night. Starship Troopers.
Starship Troopers.
What else has he done?
Hollow Man.
Oh, well Black done. Book, yes.
Soldier of Orange, Showgirls.
He has done Showgirls, yes.
He has done Showgirls.
He did Basic Instinct
like,
as well.
I was going to say, I feel like there's a big one I'm missing. Yes, Basic Instinct indeed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, he's that sort of director, which you'll find it from time to time, that sort of director that's like, oh, wow, Paul Verhoeven's released a movie. Oh, wow, Paul Verhoeven's released a movie. Oh, wow, Paul Verhoeven's released a movie. Paul Verhoeven? And he just immediately just sumpf, just fell. And everyone went, okay, cool. He had, well done him. Which is a shame, because every single one of his movies, I'm like, crushed it.
Well, that's just the thing, though, isn't it? Like, sometimes the brightest stars burn out the quickest.
Yes, that's...
I thought that was very poetic.
It was, actually. that's the best thing you've ever said on this podcast.
So, with this, the screenplay had been offered and rejected by virtually every big director in Hollywood before Paul Verhoeven got hold of it. Now, in folklore of this movie, he threw it away after reading the first pages, convinced it was just a dumb action movie, but his wife, who at the time was a script supervisor, she read it all the way through and then convinced him that the story was actually layered with many satirical and allegorical elements, leading Verhoeven to direct the film.
And then did he buy it for a dollar?
I believe he didn't. But it's one of these things that is quite laced throughout a lot of his movies. It's the sort of satirical sort of commentary, social commentary. So you have that a lot in Starship Troopers, like with the adverts. You have it in Robocop as well with the adverts for like Nukem, the this like the heart transplant.
The 6,000 sucks.
Oh yeah. And yeah, with the big Godzilla monster. And you could say in a way like Total Recall as well has a little bit on, you know, sort of the idea of virtual reality and, you know, the concept of I'd say like a little bit of racism, you know, between mutants and humans and things like that. And I think when you look at some of these movies on a surface level, you're like, oh, that's a great action movie. But if you really want to cut quite deep into it, you can go, actually, there's a lot of, like, you know, sort of, yeah, tone of commentary.
Yeah, I'm gonna put it out there, not in a disparaging way towards people, but I do feel like most people who go, yeah, Robocop's awesome, may not realise that it's not awesome for the reasons you think it's awesome. like obviously, Robocop ends with him fucking destroying someone. Ronnie Cox, we'll get into it, but he kills Ronnie Cox in a building, which is what Ed 209 does to some schmo earlier in the film. And everyone, when Robocop does it, it's like, yeah. Oh, action.
Yeah, but he was justified in doing that.
I understand what you're saying, but the point is, it's he's still using murderous violence to reach his means. And the point is, my reading of it is that actually the satirical angle is, okay, we're in a world where fucking Nukem exists and fucking everything is action and war and violence, and they've got all these news stories about all these wars happening overseas and stuff. But yes, you then as an audience are there going, yeah, fucking kill him kill him fucking harder. And it's a nice screw to you the audience, because you get to walk away being like, yeah, fuck you, Ronnie Cox. Oh wait, am I the guy that plays Nukem with my kids?
Yeah, there's a lot of undertones and messages, and we'll touch on them afterwards, and we'll kind of actually touch on the writers a little bit. So Ed Neumeier, Michael Miner, their writing partner.
Yes.
With this, they've pretty much done all the Robocops, anything to do with obviously the sequels, the TV show, the video games, the cartoon.
Oh yeah,
yeah. They've been in all of it, and they've worked with Paul Verhoeven again on Starship Troopers as well. So you can kind of see that connection between the two. And what's quite interesting about this is that Ed Neumeier came up with the idea for Robocop after he helped out set on Blade Runner, which obviously was about cop hunting synthetic humans.
Nice.
And then with this, he kind of like, well, what happens if you had synthetic or robots hunting humans? And with that, Michael Miner, he was writing a similar script as well. And he kind of came up with the idea for the police officer being killed and then being turned into a robot. Man, now, what was...
death.
Yeah, it's... it's quite interesting how they hooked up. Ed Neumeier, he was a script reader for Warner Brothers, who practically hated his job, and he wanted to pursue his dream of writing a screenplay about the robot becoming a cop. After pitching the script that was successfully filmed as a risky business, he was then made executive, so then he saw the chance to write the movie, and this is when he met up with Michael Miner, who's, as I said, working on a very similar idea. Quite interestingly, Neumeier took 10 days off to write this script, claiming that his granddad died, and he felt very guilty when the studio actually sent him flowers.
Excellent. Well, that, you know, who else are you going to get to write the satirical crime fucking action sci-fi bloody gory thing than the guy that made the fucking teenage pimp movie?
Have you watched Gamer with what's his face?
Absolutely, I have. Gerard Butler and Michael C. Hall.
I think Dexter.
Yeah, Dexter and Milo Ventimiglia, Peter Petrelli from Heroes is also in it.
Ah, yes, yeah. They kind of did that where it's kind of like in the future. There's all this sort of like tech and things like that, and it's meant to be a lot of invasion of privacy and all this other. It's meant to be a bit more commentary on information technology sort of dominating lives, and Robocop has now been sort of kind of affected by that. It's not that great of a. It's different, but it's not, and it just kind of ends up being shit because of it. You know what I mean? I didn't like it. I didn't think the action set pieces were any better, or, and again, I just try and remember anything that really from that remake, but I do remember him kind of like killing a few police officers in the precinct because they like betrayed him, and I was a bit like, I don't know, he's definitely more human in it, which kind of takes away from being a robot.
Because in my head it gets confused with the Dread remake, and I quite like the Dread remake.
Well, funnily enough, when I spoke to Helen and I said, hey, I'm recording Robocop with Craig today, and she's like, oh, is that the one where they're in the future and they go up that big building? I was like, I knew exactly what she meant. I was like, you're talking about Dread, like Carl Urban? She's like, oh yeah, that's the one. I was like, is he a robot in that? And she's like, no.
He's got the same helmet. Come on.
I was like, so Robocop, like, kind of implies that he's a robot, doesn't it?
And she's like, he's got the same helmet, and he never takes it off. And Helen's right. Same movie. Let's talk about who is in Robocop, because there's some people in this movie.
There is. And so I've got the most notable people with us. Most notably is Peter Weller, who plays Alex Murphy / Robocop. Before you get ahead of yourself, have you ever heard of Buckaroo Banzai?
Fuck yes, I've heard of Buckaroo Banzai.
Can you explain to the listener Buckaroo Banzai?
Okay, I'll tell you exactly my experience with Buckaroo Banzai. I was in New Zealand with my sister. We went to a DVD store and bought a few movies just to be like, fuck it, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
We read the synopsis of Buckaroo Banzai in the Eighth Dimension, starring Peter Weller and John Lithgow, and thought, fuck yeah.
Lithgow.
And after exactly 20 minutes, we went, fuck this, let's watch something else. So I know what Buckaroo Banzai is, but Ready Player One, the Steven Spielberg movie.
Yes.
Ready Player One will tell you that Buckaroo Banzai is a great movie.
Yeah, it's not. It's got quite the cast to it. It's got also Jeff Goldblum and Christopher Lloyd in it. It's fucking mental. He's like a surgeon who goes to fight aliens from another dimension, or something like that.
Sure. Yeah. From the eighth dimension.
Robocop was quite painful for Peter Weller. He had a lot of clashes with Paul Verhoeven with artistic directions for the character, mainly due to the suit. Now, in terms of Robocop lore, the suit was so hot and heavy that Peter Weller was actually losing about 3 pounds a day from water loss. Eventually, like an aircon or like sort of a fan was installed in the suit, but it apparently took him on the first day of trying on the suit 10 hours. For someone that has worked on with prosthetics and suits and things like that, and you've been in it, can you sympathise with Peter here?
No. Because my work with prosthetics was as an extra for basic rate, £96 a day, and yeah. He was the star of a movie. So George Clooney figured it out in Batman and Robin. Piss in the suit, man.
With this, you've also got Nancy Allen. She plays Anne Lewis. Probably best known as Liz from Brian De Palma's Dressed to Kill.
Blowout. Oh, yeah. I thought you were going to get a Blowout. Yeah, she's also in Dressed to Kill, but she is in Blowout, which, have you ever seen Blowout?
I can't say I have, actually.
Oh, my God.
Maybe I have.
Rent Blowout tonight, or do whatever you do to watch movies tonight. John Travolta records a murder, and the killer, coincidentally, talk about Buckaroo Banzai, is John Lithgow. And it's fucking, like, if you like The Conversation with Gene Hackman, it's, or Blow Up, which is an old ass British spy, it's like a conspiracy movie. It's
right.
or you know what's that Ethan Hawke movie where he fights Sinister? It's kind of falls into the same realm as them, of like some dude obsessing over a noise and then piecing it all together. It's fucking amazing, and she's in that.
Okay, that's cool. I like that.
Yeah.
Interestingly, when Nancy turned up on set, Paul Verhoeven was actually shooting the deliberately cheesy sitcom It's Not My Problem, which appears on the television screens throughout the film. You know, so this is the ones where, you know, I'll buy that for $1.
Yeah.
So Alan was initially horrified to think that that's what she signed on for. And she thought that Paul Verhoeven was an incompetent director.
Brilliant.
The main dude at OCP that you need to know is Ronnie Cox, of course.
Yeah.
Who plays Dick Jones.
Yeah.
Who was also Kohagan in Total Recall.
Yes, and what other episode of our podcast has he appeared in, Adam?
Oh, you got me. What the fuck else has he been in? Put me out with misery.
Deep Blue Sea.
Was he?
Yeah, to the point where, so they shot a scene, it's Ronnie Cox, Sam Jackson, and the lead female, but Ronnie Cox doesn't say a fucking word, so they stripped that scene.
He's like in it for like 5 seconds, isn't he?
He's there.
Interestingly, yeah, he's great. Ronnie Cox, and we're going to talk about Kurtwood Smith now. Traditionally, as they when I say typecast, they were always good guys. Kurtwood Smith generally plays sort of more like an intellectual character, and Ronnie Cox is always kind of like a more like protagonist than antagonist. But interestingly, this is why Paul Verhoeven chose them to play more menacing characters, and I think Kurtwood Smith does such a fucking awesome job as Clarence Bodicker. So it's the probably best known as is it Ren or Red?
Red.
So that 70s show.
And that 90s show.
Oh, we do not talk. And the 80s show as well.
Was it
the
80s?
Yeah, that's the one with Dr. Glenn Howard in it.
Oh, fucking Glenn Howerton.
Yes, Glenn Howerton.
Honestly, that 90s show isn't that bad. It's fine. It's not that 70s show, but
they're just trying to capture the magic from that 70s show, which you'll never have. It's that cast was, you know, obviously apart from maybe one person.
you can't capture the magic of that 70s show. It was perfect. But Kurtwood Smith, I mean, he does this, and then you say he always plays a good guy. This must have opened up the door for him to play the massive racist leader of the KKK in A Time to Kill.
Yes.
Because his death in that, he gets lit the fuck up.
Yeah, it's, again, I just got a lot of time for him. Yeah. I think Kurtwood Smith's fucking awesome.
Best thing in this film. Best thing in this film.
I'd put that up there. I think he you know, when I say someone makes a movie, and you'll kind of see this in, I think, when you go see Oppenheimer, and you're just like, you have like the main guy, which is like
Cillian Murphy,
and you're this is kind of very typical of Christopher Nolan. He just gets amazing actors to come in and just chew scenery. And when I walked out there, I was just like, Murphy was great, but Matt Damon, he was fucking amazing. Yeah. And
how was Downey Jr.?
I was just literally about to say it, and he by far steals the movie. I think in terms of just his chops. Also Josh Harness in it as well, and he's pretty cracking as well. And he just kind of goes, actually, Cillian Murphy's all right compared to when you're sort of thinking about all the other characters, all the other actors in it. With this, it came in with a budget of $13.7 million. How much do you think it made back at the box office?
185 million.
Not that much. 53.4.
Okay.
So it may.
If you ever want proof that I don't research this shit.
Well, it made over triple its budget back. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's pretty good, and I just can't believe watching back at it now. And again, this is 1987, so probably let's just call it 14 mil. It's probably a lot, but this movie just seems so much bigger than $14 million. Considering that you think of all the special effects, you're thinking the stellar casting. You've got, I'll just say, like, you know, you're thinking it feels like quite a large movie, you know, set in the whole city of Detroit in a kind of like noir-esque, you know, the city itself plays a bit of a character.
Yes. And there's a lot of cityscapes in that kind of Blade Runner-y kind of way. There's a lot of miniatures from what I remember, and you know what, there's a fucking great piece of claymation. Or is it stop motion?
I believe it's stop. I want to say stop motion, but only because I know that there's a part which comes up in the movie which I'll explain why I think it's not claymation. Maybe we talked about the same thing. I don't know.
Should we watch this motherfucker?
Yeah, I was going to say, let's get this bird in the air. Yeah. 3, 2, 1.
It is movie talk time.
Back in the room. So, Craig, first watch.
I don't know how this is a good movie, but holy shit, this is a good movie.
Oh, I love this movie.
This movie
it's one of
fucking
those...
rules.
Yeah, this is, you know, when we were talking beforehand about picking our choices of movies, and we started getting a little bit sideways because, you know, I even put it out on social media that we were recording More Rats, and we sat down
never
and watched
happened,
it.
Mate. Never happened.
We ended it. We're like, oh, we've really got nothing to say about this movie. There's nothing like, you know, things happen, but then we just felt like we almost, you know, repeating the movie sort of thing, and we weren't really having any kind of opinions on things.
I remember saying during that recording, it's tough to do an episode like we do on a comedy.
Because if you don't get
the jokes, you just don't get the jokes.
Yeah,
you know,
100%.
Such is. But this...
Yeah, this speaks to me.
This is a fucking movie. This movie...
There's
rules.
We need to do more movies like this, and just for the excuse of watching them.
I don't know if people know this, but RoboCop's a fucking movie. It starts with adverts, right?
Yeah. So you've got the news segment, which is depicts a nuclear
weapon. Sorry, I meant news. It starts with TV.
TV, and it's got a nuke going, like there's a war in South Africa, and they've got nukes or something like that, and then they're talking a little bit about, I think it's the OCP, they're talking about Kurt Smith's character killing a guy called Fred or Frank or and again, stuff like this is little details that I just kind of missed as a kid, I think. And rewatching it, I was like, okay, that's the guy that then later dies at the beginning of the, you know, the locker room scene, and they come in and take his name away.
There's
so many little things like that, little details in the movie that if you're like a, you know, 12-year-old kid watching it, you're not paying attention. You just miss these things.
It's good economical storytelling in terms of how do you convey exposition? Exposition is one character telling another character information that they don't know. Bad exposition is if I walked up to you and was like, oh, hey, Adam, you know your name is Adam. I don't fucking call you Adam, but the audience needs to know your name's Adam. Oh, hey, Adam. God, I can't believe we went to their party last night. God, Tina was such a mess. It's like, you know.
You're going to hate Oppenheimer.
But like, it's that level of like, well, we were both at that party and now we're talking in a way that is inhuman to convey information. Yes. However,
100%, yeah.
Using a news report, their job is to literally tell people what the fuck's going on. And to start with that, is genius. Like, it's really, I'm sure a million and one other movies have done it since,
but I think it's just a sort of like macabre way that it's, you know, they're trying to have an upbeat sort of positivity to it, you know, when they're just like,
and that,
oh yeah, good luck Frank, and he's just like,
that's the twist, that like the fact that the news reporters, everything is just like is
great. Yeah, it's very Ivory Tower. It's just like, you know, this. And it kind of speaks to a little bit of the themes of the movie, which is, you know, gentrification. I think that's kind of what it's kind of going through. And the idea that you have these big corporations that start to take over things like property and, you know, public services, and then sort of you're running it just for profit, which is ludicrous to think about that would ever happen.
And then you get all these you see them throughout the movies, the billboards like Delta City, a future with a silver lining, shit like that.
And that's always, and I quite like that's in the backdrop, because you see notably like when crime is happening, say like when we get to the when I say in air quotes the rape scene, and it's they do that right in front of the Delta City billboard, you know, brighter future sort of thing. Yeah. Just like, yeah, it's quite a good you know, juxtaposition between what's, you know, what's happening now and what they, you know, trying to bring out this what does OCP stand for again? It's Omni Consumer Products.
Yeah,
I believe.
Yeah,
that's right.
Just quickly, you call it the rape scene. I call it the guy gets shot at the dick scene. But that's fine. We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
we'll get to
so
it, we'll
then
get to
we
it.
Meet... I mean, again, I might be fuzzy because I could just be getting it wrong. You write more things down than I do. We meet Peter Weller, right?
We do. And his very nice 80s new wave shirt.
And his...
Yeah.
Is that his real voice, robotic kind of voice?
Well, I think he's got quite like that sort of deep, velvety, smooth voice. It's just like, he's a bit of a pretty boy, isn't he?
Buddy.
Got some cheekbones.
I think you're slime. I don't know. It's a bit, for me, there were a couple of lines where it's like, all right, you're practicing for Robo. Gotcha.
Yeah, I kind of think he's just meant to be, I think he's meant to be naive, because he's come from South Metro, which they say, oh, it's a nice place. And then they're like, yeah, welcome to hell kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he's not been brought in as an idealist. Like, he's like, right, I work in the suburbs in this nice little neighborhood, I'm gonna go into Detroit to make a difference. No, I like Omnicorp has started drafting in all the people from outside of the district, probably because all these cops keep getting killed.
Yeah,
so there's that. So it's not like, oh yeah, I'm here to make a difference sort of thing. I'm just here obviously because I have to be.
Yeah.
And with this, you kind of now get the kind of walking into the station, you kind of get the vibe what's going on, and you get into the locker room. Now, one thing I noticed is that Paul Verhoeven loves a co-ed shower.
Yes, he does.
Changing room.
Yes, he does.
He does, doesn't he? He loves it. But I think you get the severity of what's happening, because you also get the police officers talking about striking as well.
So
we should go on strike, fuck Omnicorp sort of thing.
Yeah, you've got this running theme the whole way through of like, it's almost like a ticking clock straight away, which is, hey, soon enough the cops aren't going to be here, so who are you going to rely on? It's
But isn't that kind of like later in the sequels, they kind of go into that a little bit more, where they kind of like, dude, they don't go into this movie, but it's a
I've
little...
already told you everything I remember about those sequels. They are boring, but number three is better than number two.
But the idea that they're kind of letting crime spike in the city so that gentrification, or to lower property prices, so that it makes the gentrification a bit easier so they can like to bulldoze. Or I think that's the whole sort of idea of, you know, the resistance, they're kind of like squatting, aren't they? And they're trying to knock down the buildings or some shit like that.
In number three,
That's the thing when they're talking about, like, we should go on strike, and it's like, no, cops don't go on strike. And I was like, well, in the UK, they can't. It's like the army can't strike, police officers can't strike.
I did enjoy maybe halfway through the film where it cuts, because it keeps cutting to people like, what's your opinion? What's your opinion? And it cuts to someone who, it says their name, like Jim Axelwood or whatever, and underneath it's like, homeless. and that's all he's defined as. And
he's like space.
Hey, man, it makes it a free country. It's not a free country, but it will be. And it's like, oh, you're a fucking moron. You know, they've just typed in how to write a moron, and you've come up, sir.
It's kind of like in a way where they're introducing these characters quite quickly, which I quite like. Mm-hmm. So you've got people that are like, okay, you're, as I said, not an idealist, but you seem quite clean cut for a guy, you know, from Metro South.
Yeah.
You've been brought into all these sort of like Detroit's kind of like hardcore cops, because it's like, you know, the I think that spaced out homeless dude, he's like, it's the law of the jungle, man, or something like that. And it very much is, you know, sort of the concrete jungle. But you then get introduced straight away to Officer Lewis, who's bringing in a suspect who then turns violent and starts beating everyone up. Now, the thing I found about that was, it's like, there's two cops on him, Lewis and the other guy. He starts like lashing out, punches Lewis, punches the other guy. It's a police station full of cops, right? And nobody's helping out. And he just lets then Lewis obviously take care of it and beat the shit out of him. But it's like so nonchalant as well, because then Sarge is like, oh, once you're done like fucking up your suspect, you know, want to introduce you to your new partner, sort of thing. And you just like, eh, I don't know how that would fly these days, you know what I mean? In terms of like sort of climate of American 80s. Police. It was the 80s, which is always the excuse that you can go with. But yeah, just sort of no one seems to give a shit or help out the female police officer that's getting beaten up.
Because it's Lewis, she's got it covered. Yeah, I think it's RoboCop 3 where there's like a distress call, and all the cops are in the diner, and they all start chanting her name as like a Lewis, because they know that she's the best of them.
But didn't she die like 5 minutes into that movie or something?
Maybe. But yeah, so in the meantime, and I'm just, again, as I'm always aware of this, we've been chatting for 50 minutes and are in the first...
Oh, don't worry, I think we can get through this bit quite quickly now. Because we jumped to the boardroom now.
Boardroom. Ronnie Cox has to demonstrate Ed 2.0.
Again, this is, I feel, the subtlety of... When I say subtlety, it's the fact that they... point blank say it, and obviously he just wasn't listening or giving a shit. But on the elevator ride, they basically explain the whole premise of RoboCop in the sense that Ed 209 is the big product that they want to launch. It's the big fuck off robot cannons. The appearance is based on a killer whale.
Nice. I see that. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, you see that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now in the elevator, they're explaining it. They're just like, well. The old man, he wanted a backup plan, but they gave the assignment to Bob Morton, which then put a target on the back of him from Dick Jones. Dick Jones doesn't like the fact that there's somebody like essentially competing for the product. And so when Ed 209 explicitly fucks up and kills the junior exec or whatever in the most violent way you can imagine,
That guy gets turned into Swiss cheese.
Oh, he does. And I like the fact that he gets blown and falls on the Delta City model.
Yeah, that was nice. That was nice symbolism.
Very nice symbolism.
And then proceeds but to get continued then you kind of... into Swiss cheese.
Yeah, it's not the fact that he just gets you get shot once, twice. It's
no,
like
no.
It's like
Ed 209 is taking fucking names.
It's like I want to say it's almost like a Simpsons parody. You know what I mean, where it just keeps cutting back and forth.
It's almost but like Simpsons-y, and it's almost like It's Always Sunny in the Lethal Weapon 5 episode, where it's just like a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. But it's very Paul Verhoeven. It's very like let's amp this shit up to 11.
100%. And but this is where Bob Morton sees his chance, mm-hmm. and he convinces the old man to green light the Robocop program,
yeah.
which was always the backup. And they say that he can get a prototype out in about 90 days.
Yeah.
And all they need to do is just wait for some poor schmuck to volunteer.
Yeah, that's it. Volunteer, air quotes.
Yeah, so this is where you kind of now get the old TJ laser spinning of the gun from Alex Murphy. Mm. Spinning it like he's just robbed a quickie mart.
Excellent.
And you kind of get this sense that, you know, like, you know, he's an all right dad, you know, it's like, oh, the kid loves it, you know, all that sort of shit. And this kind of, just on a small tangent, you don't get too much about the family, even though there's a whole scene, like, dedicated to it.
Yeah, which, I'll be honest, was the worst scene of the film for me.
Oh, fucking yeah. It's like, if there was to say there was a grinding halt to the movie, it's that scene.
It's a huge grinding. It's a real, like, hey... We're an hour into the movie, but it's time to care about Robocop. It's like, no, I don't actually, because I already care about Robocop. Because I tell you what, I'm an hour into Robocop.
So, yeah, you've got now the introduction of all the bad guys like Kurtwood Smith. You've got his gang, and they've just done some sort of bank robbery.
Yeah, they
burnt all the money.
Yeah, Bobby burnt all the money. Bobby.
Yeah,
burnt
all the money. Bobby.
Can you fly, Bobby?
Can you fly, Bobby?
And so what it is,
I think,
is...
I think that's a good Kurtwood Smith.
That's a good. It's good. Smith. It's good from both of us. But yeah, so Kurtwood Smith, Bobby, yeah, definitely. Kurtwood Smith and his merry gang of assholes have robbed a bank. All the money's burned. Murphy and Lewis are chasing. And we get our first shootout. Murphy leans out the windows, double guns. Nice.
Yeah, dual wielding.
Yeah, fuck yeah, dual wielding. And they throw Bobby into the front of the police car to stop them. And
yeah,
then some crazy shit happens.
so we get to the warehouse, mm-hmm. where they've all kind of like hidden. But like in a weird, like kind of nonchalant way, because you got one of them just like having a piss, the other two watching TV.
Oh,
and he kind of like
watching Buy That for a Dollar.
Yes, and it's just like, sorry, there's a police car chasing you guys. Like, you've managed to like just rock up at home and kick your shoes off, and then just not give a shit. Like, fucking put the kettle on, and then so you have Alex and Lewis split up, and Lewis goes upstairs, catches what's his face taking piss, but then she's caught off guard by trying to take a peek at his dick.
Yeah, he's just there waiting, like, she's gonna look. She's gonna look.
Mind if I zip this up? Yeah. And she looks down, it's like, couldn't resist.
When I watched it with Taryn, and Taryn's response was just, ugh, of course.
Of course.
Look, what happens is she gets off, kicked off of a ledge, and then he gets the fuck blown out of him.
Yeah, so he is cornered by
everyone,
the rest of the gang.
Yes,
and
because
you get like them probably one of the most brutal death scenes, I think.
Oh,
just seeing someone like, getting blown away and screaming in pain. Apparently, this was even meant to be even more violent. Not even just in the extended cut, in the test screening or something like that.
Yeah.
They got an X rating. So they had to cut actually quite a bit of it.
Okay, that's fair. I mean,
it's still like fucking gratuitous.
Yeah, I had enough in a good way. I had enough, and I was like, "This is intense. I don't feel let down." It was,
yeah.
you know, you watch it as a kid, and you're like, "Oh, is it going to be as violent as I remember it?" Yes. Yes, it is. Actually.
You get some important lines. So you get the dead or alive, you're coming with me.
Yes, that comes back later.
RoboCop's fucking awesome line. But then you have some great lines by Kurtwood Smith, which is, "Cops don't like me. I don't like cops."
Give him a hand.
Yeah.
After shooting his fucking arm off. Great.
And I this scene's just great. I think like for this movie, there's just so many iconic scenes.
Yeah.
And when you kind of think of
'80s action cinema.
I don't know. I think that the previously mentioned Ed 209
scene. Oh, I'm not saying all of them. I'm just saying most of them.
Oh, fair enough.
Most of them. Like, yeah, later on, when Barbie Boy dies, you know, Kevin Smith walking in, "Bitches, leave."
Yes, that's a great line. I've got that down here.
In the hands of any other actor, you'd be like, "Oh, okay, that was a line." But in the hands of him, it's—I don't know—it's just memorable. It's just—he's so good.
And this is like now the sort of the plot point of, you know, he's essentially dead and he's been taken to hospital to try and resuscitate, and you know, it doesn't work out, and then he quickly jumps to the sort of, like, I say, like the factory scene, not like, you know, the the computer science labby factory, you know, building RoboCop,
which I quite enjoyed the fact that there was no level of this is Murphy, he's perfect. On his psych test, he scored a 17.0 average for personality, blah, 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 blah. It's just, you know what? He's dead, we'll take him.
That's it. He's just a lump of meat at this point.
That's it. And when he comes in, he's like, "Oh, you managed to save the arm." Lose the fucking arm. His arm.
And
there's no humanity from OCP. It's just all he is just...
Yeah, we own him.
Something for us to facilitate.
Now, I think the most underrated bit about this is that they don't show him for a long time. You don't fully see RoboCop from this point, even into the police station. It takes a while for you to actually see RoboCop fully. And I think that's genius, because you get to see... So, you get all the little kind of cuts of, like, you know, different times. It's like, right, we're going to put the LED on. It's New Year's now. And then they do the reveal. And on the reveal, just in the corner, there's a little TV. And it just has him sort of, like, walking past. And you can, if you're paying close attention, you kind of just see the back of RoboCop's head. And you're just like, right, okay. And it's just kind of like... you know, when we talk about not revealing the monster sort of thing. And it's like, I think it's always more scary and... In horror movies, when you can't fully see what the monster is, or if you show it way too early, it kind of almost spoils the anticipation or the tension. And you know, you kind of think of, like, Jaws is the perfect example of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, yeah,
that's it. And that's the problem with RoboCop 2, 3, and I haven't seen the remake, but people watch RoboCop and went, "Yeah, it's about RoboCop, right?" It's like, no, it's about so many other things, and also RoboCop's there.
They really sort of bring in sort of like the human element of, like, and it's just almost like how good the reactions are around RoboCop, make you go, "Oh yeah, fuck yeah." Is so, you know, when they go into the police, when they finally get to the police station, they start bringing him in.
Yeah,
it's like you still don't see RoboCop because it's like the frosted glass.
Yeah,
and everyone just, like, goes stunned silent, and then they're like, "What the fuck is that?" And then they all go, like, chasing after him. And it's just such a cool moment, because it's almost like an air of, like, excitement, but also, like, just pure curiosity that's just taken over these police officers. That just, like, fucking hell, like, what is this that's just come in? And I just think it's a very good bit of screenwriting, but very good direction as well, just to capture that sort of that emotion.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to have seen more of the lady who French kissed RoboCop, just to see what her, like, hangover was the next day, I guess.
Yeah, fair.
Be like, wait, hold on. Did I kiss a robot, or am I now kissing dead bodies? Like, what was she...
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
I have not thought that.
They never explore that. But no, I mean, like, Miguel Ferrer is there going, "Oh, you know, buddy, you're gonna be a fucking badass." Like, okay, cool. You're not there saying you're gonna solve crime, you're not gonna change the world, it's you're gonna be a fucking killer, and that was cool. again, it's nailing what these characters are.
Yeah, but Robocop is the product.
Yes, you know that's, I mean? That's it. So we get the first kind of inclination from Lewis that she knows who Murphy is.
Yeah, we kind of get in there. So you've got the gun gallery.
Yeah, bit, yeah. That bit. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's the that's what I knew you were kind of getting it, but there is obviously the other sort of bit where, you know, she sort of confronts him. But again, just kind of like conveying how awesome he is. It's just like more from the reaction of the police officers. Like that one police officer is just there. It's just like, look at that fucking gun.
Yeah,
and you're just like, yeah. And it kind of just has that, invokes the emotion of the audience, of the characters that are surrounding him. And I just really, I don't know why I really like it. I just think it's just fucking cool.
Yeah. No, it's good. And it's the idea of everyone's shooting, and then for everyone to stop shooting because they've heard a type of gun that was something extra. Lets you as the audience now know, like, hey, there is something extra about this gun.
Interestingly, in the Ed 209 scene where they give the let's say we just call him junior exec, the Desert Eagle to hold at Ed 209, that was meant to be
to comply.
That's the one. Sounded like Patrick Stewart there. with this that gun, the Desert Eagle was originally meant to be Robocop's gun, but when they gave, because it's big and bulky, it's like, you know, it's actually quite big in a normal person's hand. But when they actually then gave it to Robocop to hold, because of the suit and the gloves and things like that, it looked quite small. So right. Then the head of the prop or the armory dude, he went away and just built this thing out of another, like, two guns or something like that. It's just like, oh, fuck it, just put these two things together.
Nice.
And then came up with this thing, which is an iconic gun. I remember having a water pistol that was shaped like Robocop gun when I was younger.
You had a water pistol shaped like the water? That's some good parenting. And I'm not being facetious.
Yeah, it's so they've kind of built up that the monster that is Robocop, but now you kind of then get to see him in action. And this is where he's gone into the cage and they've done like the testing, like that at him, which is all a little bit weird.
Yeah.
Explain, obviously, he eats baby food as well.
The baby food thing is very funny, yeah. And again, it tells you all the questions that, like, a douchey podcaster might ask one day. Like, oh, but what does he eat? What does he eat? How does he shit? Things like that. And it's like, okay, we're covering it.
How does he shit?
He sits down in the chair, and there you go. He unwinds.
This is true. So then he goes out and he needs a car. Now, I find this bit the funniest because when Robocop walks past and grabs the keys out of the air, apparently this took all day to film because we said how restrictive the suit is.
Yeah.
Apparently the gloves were like this foam rubber. So whenever the keys hit Paul Weller's hands, they just bounced off.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so apparently it took over 50 takes.
50
an
takes?
An entire day's worth of
film. Are you kidding?
50 takes for that one shot of him grabbing the keys.
That's madness. At a certain point,
you would just be like,
at a certain point, just rewrite
fuck's
the scene.
Sake.
Just rewrite the scene.
And you'd be like, Studdum.
So yeah, like he goes out, and then we get this sweet kind of 1-2-3 punch of him solving crimes. So the first one is some dude who's like, give me the safe, and Robocop walks in, and it's like a mom and pop store. Robocop walks
but
in.
I feel like that's almost the reveal, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, that's the, you've seen Robocop, you've seen the glimpse, but when he enters through the store, the doors, you're like, boom, right, this is fucking Robocop. You're like, oh yeah, this is great.
And the music's playing, and this guy's
the music's great.
Entire reaction is, fuck me, fuck me, fuck me, whilst he's shooting Robocop inaccurately. Well, accurately, but you know what, bullets bounce off of him.
Yeah, is he, do you think he's like the same sort of, you know, the argument for Batman, isn't it? It's just like, why not just shoot him in the face?
Shoot him in the face, like, shoot him in the chin bit, you know, but...
But does that, is that actually going
to
do anything?
No, not to Robocop.
Like, so
not to Robocop.
I wonder, like, is he... You know, when you kind of think of actually what is Robocop in terms of like his structure, it's like, is it Peter Weller's skull and his because I know it's his brain, but then I just almost imagine that it's actually like almost like a Terminator style sort of skull. It's metal, and they've literally just stuck his face on
that's
the front.
That's
pretty
of much it. Yeah.
That's what I'd assume, like, because in back half of his head's all fucking metal.
Yeah, when he takes the helmet off later, it's pretty sweet, pretty revealing. But yeah, so he comes in, he bends the guy's gun, and that's great.
And then fucking smashes him into that glass, like, beer cabinet.
You'd love to see it. You just love to see it. Then the next one is, as I've dubbed, the dick shooting scene.
Right, have you seen... I must have sent you the scene remake of that where they like he shoots one guy in the dick and then about 50 other blokes all turn up and he shoots them all in the dick.
No, but that sounds like a MacGruber thing and I'm into it.
Oh mate, it's the best thing on the internet ever. And it's just I'll send it to you, but
we're on the internet
but this is better, way better. Cool. There is a there was a project years ago to remake RoboCop scene by scene, but different directors.
Okay.
And you could do whatever you wanted with it. You know what I mean? You could make it like low budget as possible. So, you know, there's like cardboard RoboCop sort of scene. But this one scene is just done so well. And yeah, it's RoboCop shooting about 50 blokes in the dick.
Brilliant.
It's amazing. Check it out.
Okay, I'll check that out. But that's the next one. Is the woman's getting attacked and raped, and they cut her hair, and she's got more hair down there. Thanks, movie. And they RoboCop comes along, and shoots one of them in the dick, and she, thank you so much. And you know that inhumane level of like, madam, you have been in a crisis of rape. Was it like a rape hotline or like
trauma
rape,
team? Yeah, something
rape
like
counseling
crisis team.
A rape crisis center has been notified, and she looks at him confused as fuck. And
now, originally in that scene, he was meant to shoot him in the head, and like the bullet was meant to kind of like graze a cheek sort of thing, and there was meant to be, I don't know if it was meant to be a repercussion of it, but it was meant to kind of show that, you know, he didn't quite value human life, he wasn't like trying, but Paul Verhoeven actually noticed that when she was being held and dragged around, that her legs were spread. So he's like, well, what could RoboCop just shoot him through the dress?
Honestly, much better shoot idea. Him. Much better idea.
Oh,
much
fucking
more,
100%
much
better idea.
More memorable. Well done.
Very well done. And then thirdly, the mayor's office.
This idiot. Like, I get it. Like, he's written as an idiot, but I've taken the mayor hostage. I want a brand new car and my job back. He wants a recount. So was he going against the mayor?
I can't remember what his job title is, but he's like former something something.
So what's he getting recounted?
He's like
what,
an elected position.
What's he getting recounted is my question.
Some sort of political candidate.
Hey. Don't ask any
But
questions.
No matter what the results, I want my old job back, and then I want a car, something... What does
something
he say? It's like something fast.
Something fast.
Leather
seats. And he does basically an advert for the SUX.
Basically.
And they're like, what about cruise control? Don't jerk me off. He's like, you will get you all the cruise control you want. I said don't jerk me off.
I swear they do this joke though in, I think it's like Naked Gun, isn't it?
It's Naked Gun.
It's like
Gun,
where they're being held hostage. It's like, I want something classy.
Yeah, it's kind of a Naked Gun-esque bit, isn't it? The idea that you're taking someone hostage so you can get your job back. It's like, imagine the water cooler the next day.
Bob last night. Yeah, he took everyone hostage.
Hey guys, really sorry. You know, threatened your lives, potentially ruined your lives. But, I've put cake in the break room. That's for everyone. Help yourself. And let's never speak of it again. 100%. It's silly. But yeah, he does this and it's going well. And in the meantime, Bobby Boy is slagging off Ronnie Cox in the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. So again, just... I think this is why, again, I just love this movie. It's just the little things surrounding the scene.
Yeah.
So you've got... So, unbeknownst to anyone else, Dick Jones is having a shit.
He's just taking a shit.
You can see his ankles. Yeah. You can see his ankles in the cubicle.
Balls of the movie.
But then,
like, we're going to have him taking a shit. Like, he doesn't walk in. It's not like a, oh crap, but he's behind me. It's, no, he's taking a shit.
It's the fact that them two have walked in using their gold executive lounge cards and but there's three other people in there already, and they've all obviously seen Dick Jones going to the cubicle. So when they start slagging off Dick Jones, they're all looking at each other like, fuck,
yeah,
like
Dick Jones is going to come out.
Fuck this guy up, yeah. But then not only that, it's the bit that his mate, who was taking a piss, realizes Dick Jones there, like zips up, and then you can see that he's actually pissed his pants.
Yeah.
And he's go, it's just like, oh yeah, it just tells you everything you need to know, like through other people,
yeah,
in the sense. And I kind of get, I like Dick Jones' kind of explanation of things, and it's just like, oh look, you're here, you're young, you took your chance, but know this, like, mate, I'm second in charge. Like, as soon as the old man goes, it's like, you're really fucked up.
I liked that. And I liked his
yeah.
When I was a kid, I called the old man names. And I can't remember what it is, but he's asshole. Basically like, idiot, Dumbo, maybe sometimes even,
yeah,
asshole. It's like, okay, cool.
Yeah, but there was always respect.
Yes, yeah. And again, you get it. I kind of understand where he's coming from here. I don't fully believe it, but I understand him. And then, yeah, so he grabs her by the hair, and it's that level of amped up rivalry between them.
Yeah, you kind of get the idea of his motivation as well. It's like, look, I had the Air 209. I was going to go sell. I was selling that to the fucking military. We had like years of like rinsing. Because we had like, you know, spare parts and all that
even
shit.
Even if the product didn't like work.
Yeah. And that's where you kind of, this guy, all he cares about is the bottom line. He cares, he just wants to make the company and himself a lot of fucking money. And you're like, okay. And you kind of go, right, he's evil corporation. But that's Bob Morton as well. Yeah. Bob Morton's, he doesn't give a shit about police officers. He didn't bring in Robocop to help Detroit out. He's just literally brought him in to do the same thing.
And therein lies the kind of hypocrisy of the movie. And again, from the audience's point of view at the end, oh, Ronnie Cox died, yay. Oh, I can't believe Ronnie Cox is so violent, but God, we love seeing him get killed in such a graphic way. And it's like, it's that level of, yeah, kind of satirical finger pointing to the audience and going, everyone's a piece of shit. But because of that, I guess everything's fun. I don't know.
Yeah, and then you have like the sort of sequences now that sort of start rolling the film towards the end, which you have like the dream sequence. So Robocop sort of imagines the people are killing him, finally hunts down Emil at the gas station, which is a great scene, the gas station blowing up.
Oh my God, the fucking, you're a bookworm, you're a college boy, Guess you're gonna have to die for that, huh?
Yeah, fucking reading the book, fucking scum. But this is where you kind of start getting the reveal of Murphy, or him understanding who he is, because this is where Lewis sort of confronts him in the hallway and says, Murphy, it's you. And you have the repeat of the line of dead or alive, you're coming with me, which obviously ticks off Emil. And with this, it's kind of like, all right, this is the sort of like, I get this part. But this is where you then have the, you know, where we say like kind of grinds maybe to a halt because you have him going back to his house.
Honestly, skip it. Like, I don't care. It's boring. Skip it. He goes back and remembers that he was human. The end.
And that's it. And it's kind of like, I feel like none of that serves it. And I'll kind of get on to, actually, I'll just hit it now. So later on, when Robocop finally gets away from the OCP lot, and he's in the factory like toward, this is like third act, and he's like, right, okay, so I had a family, what happened to them? And Lewis is like, oh yeah, she moved away and moved on. And I was like moved on, like, so what, she's like shacked up with someone else now? Like, I was like, oh, that'd be quite quick. And I was trying to think about the turnaround. I was thinking, well, you had Bob Morton say that the turnaround for Robocop would be, what was it, 90 days?
3 months.
3 months, okay. So Robocop's at a minimum been knocking around for three months, like, as in like being built in the factory.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's say he's been on the job for a week. So in the space of 3 months, his wife has moved up, sold the house, gone somewhere else, and met someone else as well. But, you know, from all their, like, the flashbacks of, you know, they're meant to be, like, the happy family.
It feels like domestic bliss. And here's the thing I don't fully understand. So he's been on the job a week.
Yeah.
He was stationed somewhere else before that.
Metro South, yes.
But still within the same city, yeah?
I'd assume, yeah, sort of on the outskirts of Detroit.
The photo from Detroit Halloween is from that same house.
Yes.
So, okay, fair enough. All right, I guess it's like, I guess, moving from borough to borough in London. Okay, fine.
But what does Halloween have to do with anything?
Oh, just because the kid was dressed up as...
Well, it's a flashback. It could happen any time.
No, it could have happened every time. Yes, agreed.
And Halloween happens every year.
Yeah, but no. My point is, if he's been on the job a week, it felt like he just moved there.
No, I feel that they're still in that suburb because that's where they moved out or when he died. So
my point is, it felt like he'd moved to that house to get the new job.
I feel different. I feel that that's the suburbs and he's travelled into Detroit, because when they, you know, in the last scene of the flashback, they're waving him goodbye, aren't they? I kind of feel that that's him, like, you know, he's I'm off to, you know, Detroit sort of thing. Like,
right.
I feel, you know what I mean? It kind of feels a little bit more of a...
Either way. It's a boring ass scene and it really grinds me to a halt. In the next scene,
anyway, it doesn't fucking matter.
Hey, what are we doing? In the next scene, Colonel Smith is fucking up some drug dealer.
He is. This is the coat factory. Yep. This is awesome, and apparently this is meant to be Peter Weller's favorite memory from filming RoboCop.
Beating the shit out of Colonel Smith.
Well, he said when filming the sequence, Peter Weller was listening to Peter Gabriel's song Red Rain on his Walkman inside RoboCop's helmet as he exchanged gunfire with the bad guys, which is a very juxtaposing song. I can imagine that'd be quite cool. It must be quite cool, actually. You know, you're in that it's this huge factory. You just got, like, some... you're just doing your own thing. You're firing a big fuck-off gun. Yeah, I could see that. But yeah, you kind of get the idea that Kurtwood Smith's... this is a weird thing. Like, Kurtwood Smith's meant to be like a big, bad kingpin, isn't he? Because he controls Detroit, or they say he does. And you've got Sal, who is the drug lord with his big old production line of, you know, coke bottles And he's got about like 20 guys there. Now, he seems like a bigger guy than Kurtwood Smith.
I feel like he's
because Kurtwood Smith only has like
drug dealer, but Kurt Smith is the bigger badass.
But the way they're talking back and forth, it doesn't feel... He's like, I know everyone, I've got all the connections, and it's like, yeah, but you're just hanging out with the same like 3 guys. Mm. Like, I don't think you, I think you think you're bigger than you are. You don't have this sort of fucking facility going on. You're just hiding out at some dump of a warehouse.
I do see what you mean. I suppose I've never thought about it, but you're right. He is a small dog acting like a big dog, maybe.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that. And then they have the old Egyptian standoff. It's like, Gans.
Sorry, the Egyptian standoff.
Well, you can call it Mexican standoff.
I mean, was it an Egyptian standoff? Is that a thing from a thing that I've seen?
No, it's like my mate, like from ages ago, he always used to, like, whenever you'd get at like a sort of like a 3 or 4-way junction or something like that, he used to do a fair bit of work in Egypt.
Right.
So he'd always be like, it's like a fucking Egyptian standoff here. Because in Egypt, apparently, they're just shit drivers. Okay. Allegedly.
Understood. So yeah, then RoboCop comes in and pretty much he lays waste to all of Sal's guys. All of Kurtwood Smith guys apart from one, the guy with the headband, gets away.
Interestingly enough about this scene, the shootout at the factory was not originally intended to be so fast paced. and that the all the guns, the props that all the like, henchmen are using, they kept malfunctioning and like jamming.
Oh, right.
So most of the camera shots don't provide more than like sort of like 2 or 3 seconds, because a lot of what they filmed was unusable. So so with all the so in the editing room, they just made it like a really quick cut.
Nice. But yeah, yeah,
obviously it, yeah, it helps. That's why I love this movie, man. It's, you find out so many little things about this that are just like, oh, fuck it, we'll deal with it.
Necessity is the seed of creativity, I guess. We have, at this point, missed one very key scene, I think.
Which was
the death of Babby Boy.
Oh, no, no, because we're not quite...
Yeah, man.
Oh, yeah. No, you're right, actually.
Because Kurtwood Smith's face is about to get fucked up, and he's about to reveal, like...
So he finds... So Murphy's found out who he is, and then, I actually do have a note. So thank you very much, Greg. We did skip over this bit. So we had the bitches leave.
Bitches and leave.
This is, like, Dick James's revenge. I kind of felt that it was a bit weird that you would have... You would film, essentially, a confession.
Mm, yeah.
And it's like, hey, like, I've got this little DVD, CD, whatever, mini disc, and it says, I'm cashing you out, or something like that.
Yeah.
And you kind of go, well, if that survived the explosion, which, yeah, not very likely considering how explosive that one single grenade,
yeah.
Which I can imagine maybe, you know, like as it blows up a gas line or some shit like that, just whatever. But I was kind of thinking, what if that, you know, evidence was left?
Yeah, then that's it. That's curtains for you, I guess. But it's nice. It's a nice death. It has a few of the regular tropes. The kind of whatever he's paying you, I'll double it, and things like that.
Kettle Smith doesn't really give him an answer, does he? He just shoots him in the legs a couple of times, and then it's just like,
yeah, he's just a badass. He's just coming in and doing his job. And it's, I remember watching it as a kid and being like, dude, just move quicker, just get to that grenade quicker, just get there quicker. But having now gone through some serious knee trauma,
I was gonna say,
yeah, there's no way he's getting to that in time. But yeah, I mean, that one grenade does the work of, speaking of Oppenheimer, the entire fucking bomb, I guess. it's a big explosion.
Yeah, it's a big explosion. So with this, you know, I know you quite like Ray Wise, and he was saying that, I think in one of the explosions, and this is probably later on when they're blowing up that street, and him and Kurtwood Smith ended up being too close to a lot of the explosions, and they caused like pieces of glass to get hit into Ray's face. So he received like additional stunt pay for the mishap. Nice. So, but then Ray jokingly states that he then devised a way that he would be as close to every explosion as possible, so he could gain extra money.
Take any motherfucker.
Which made me think. Maybe think of you when you're sort of like giving out about your time on the TV show that we cannot name, and you're just like, oh, all these guys are trying to kill us. It's like, yeah, but you should have let them.
Yeah, but I wasn't getting extra pay for it. I wasn't getting extra pay. So yeah, back to Kurtwood Smith. Then goes to Kurtwood Smith gets the shit kicked out of him by Robo, and dude, we're an hour and a half into a. Talking about an hour and a half movie.
Someone was giving out about this about Commando. They were like, your podcast was longer than the movie.
We do like, tend to talk for too long. We do. We really do. So look, to prattle along, Kevin Smith reveals to Robocop, like, hey, it was Dick Jones. I work for Dick Jones.
I work for Dick Jones.
And so Robocop can't goes to arrest Dick Jones, or goes to kill Dick Jones, but he can't because of the secret classified fucking
directive.
And then Dick Jones turns the cops on Robocop.
Well, he has the fight with Ed 209 first time.
God, man, this podcast is going to be so long.
No, because this is the bit where... Because did you think that Ed 209 was claymation?
Yeah.
Right, okay. So the whole bit, I was like, I don't think it is clay, and I think it is the scale of miniature, because when he falls down the stairs, I know that they built a miniature stair set to then push the model down.
Okay.
So I assume from that tidbit of information that Ed 209 is just a like practical miniature.
Yeah.
But they do stop motion with it.
Okay. Well, fair enough.
Unless they had multiple
stop motion is probably what I meant instead of claymation in that case.
Right. Well, because obviously with claymation you still stop motion, but
yeah, it's like I think I've just used the wrong term.
With malleable clay.
Yeah.
Which is like not.
Wallace and Gromit, who wouldn't? Wallace and Gromit would get the shit kicked out of them by RoboCop. That's not even a debate, Adam. Come on. So yeah, you can't kill Dick Jones, but Dick Jones can get all of the SWAT team, not the police, the SWAT, because SWAT guys are idiots.
Well, I kind of felt like they got a bit undermined and shown up by RoboCop when you at the mayor's bit.
Yeah, so they got a chip.
So I felt there was a bit of a grudge.
And then he gets rescued. Yeah, because he gets the shit. He gets blown to pieces twice in this movie.
Yeah, he doesn't. Ed 209 does I think most of the damage, you know, firing rockets off in the office and things like that, and shooting him with big cannons, and then he gets absolutely peppered downstairs. But it's like, you know, it's like small firearms, and you know there are some rifles. I'm pretty sure I saw like some sort of M16S type rifles, but I was like, well, we just saw him at the Coke factory getting shot the shit out of, and that didn't slow him down a bit, so I can't imagine this is doing that much. But then because of all the damage from Ed 209, I'm just kind of wondering if like the sort of integrity of his armor, his little holes and stuff like that, stuff starting to get through him a little bit. But he's messed up, he's pretty banged up by the time he gets into Lewis's car. But this is where they fuck off to the end scene, as it were, and you kind of get the snippet of, you know, how powerful Dick Jones is. He's got everyone out of jail, he's got them all the 6,000 cars, and he's given them these huge fuck off cannons. Like, they look like the guns from a razor. And you kind of now sort of, as I say, rolling well into the third act, where Kurtwood Smith is just being told by Dick Jones, it's like, hey, look, you spilled your guts. Did something. Yeah, you fucked up. And he's like, look at my face. And I was just like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, you're still Kurtwood Smith. Your wife is still that secretary outside. You're fine.
Oh, you know that secretary is actually Kurtwood Smith's wife.
Yeah, it's a good little piece of triv, that.
Yeah, it's a good bit of triv.
RoboCop takes solace in the... It's the same kind of factory space from the beginning of the movie, isn't it, right?
It probably was
the same warehouse space where he gets turned into RoboCop. Him and Lewis take refuge there, but Kurtwood Smith tracks him down, and then we get the best final 15 minutes of any movie in the history of cinema.
But then the thing I don't get about that is, like, RoboCop chucks a bit of like metal or something like that across the road to distract him, then they'll like blow that side up, and you're like, oh wow. And then it's like, all right, you just distracted these guys, and he's like, looking for me. Yeah,
exactly.
And this is like, and you're just like, yeah, they were. Like, well, any element of surprise that you did have
is just gone.
Wow, out, bolted. And but then they all get off like the first couple of shots as well. You know what I mean? And then RoboCop shoots him. Shoots the guard a lot.
Yeah, he very much could have just been like, bam, 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 bam.
Oh, 100%. It's just like, you dumbass. Yeah. I thought you meant to be like a fucking supercomputer on legs. And yeah, so then you have him picking off, and then you have the is it Eli? Okay, fucking what's his name? Emil driving the truck into the toxic waste dump thing, which is just obviously you have that in every sort of abandoned factory.
Yeah, of course. Why wouldn't?
Gets and turns into Play-Doh essentially. Yep.
And is that the noise of his kind of scream is awesome, just awesome.
I do like the interaction between him and Ray Wise.
Yeah, get Ray the fuck Wise away is from like, me, oh, man.
fuck
and
off
then
me.
Kevin
yeah,
Smith fucking... turns him into juice.
Yeah, it's such a weird... I just find that such a weird thing, because this is like... the fact you drive into him, he just splashes into like a puddle.
Yeah, and I again, that, since I was a kid, has stuck with me always and forever. So good.
Yeah.
Just pure, almost Cronenberg-esque stuff.
Yeah, I get that. And you have now the sort of Kurtwood Smith's like flipped his car, landed in like a huge puddle sort of thing, and he's taken down Lewis. He shot her a few times, and this is where, you know, when this movie has a lot of allegories, you hear a lot of people talk about that this is an allegory for Jesus, or modern day Jesus Christ. Isn't it? So he's been resurrected, and now he's walking on water, sort of thing. And I was like, I always just go, is this a reach? Like, is this okay?
They are grasping.
Is this a grasp? But there's so many people that come out and just go, I do want to think that. I think some of the screenwriters did say, yeah, there is a little bit of that symbolism behind it, but I do feel it's a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, well, there's that classic scene where you find out in the Bible, you find out that Jesus eats baby food.
There is that, yes. And you have the kind of like, when I say like the final showdown, cause it's not really, it's kind of like the prerequisite for it. And, you know, he gets the crane dropped on him, and Kurtwood Smith like beats him down with the crowbar, and then eventually gets stabbed in the throat himself. Yeah. You know, and this is like, you know, so you've got, what's her name?
Yes.
Lewis in the puddle, and she's like, oh, Murphy, I'm a mess. And RoboCop says, oh, don't worry, they'll fix you. They fix everything. Now, what a lot of people were worried about from this, and I think this comes from the test screening, was that Lewis was never like the love interest for RoboCop. He's just meant to be an out-and-out badass partner. There was this idea of a female RoboCop. So there was this like, oh, you know, because you never see what happens to Lewis after this, after the scene. You just see,
she says like, oh, I'm done, or I'm she's not like I'm damaged or something like that. It's like there is a
directorial reason for this, which I'll when at the end of this movie, because now it's rocks up to OCP, blows the shit out of Ed 209, and he confronts Dick Jones in the boardroom, the executive room, and you have Dick Jones take the old man hostage, and this is where you get a brilliant bit of Dick, you're fired, and that's where RoboCop blows him.
You watched the ending of a different movie.
Full on shaft and
37.
Well, did you notice when Dick Jones falls through the window, there's a really weird, I don't know if it's claymation, actual like kind of like, because if you watch it, it's kind of like a weird puppet. It's not like a Alan Rickman slow-mo falling from the Nakatomi.
They didn't actually throw Ronnie Cox out of the window.
No, but it's a really weird, like, I want to say like puppet, or but it's animated. It's watch it. It's fucking weird. And you're like, why did they go with that?
Yeah, I mean,
because everything else is great in this movie in terms of like all the special effects. But, you know, obviously limited at the time. But
as we established, they ran out of fucking money and time.
That is true, actually. So, that might actually have something to do with it.
That'll do. That's fine.
Now, what's the end line of this movie?
He says his name is Murphy.
Yeah, so, oh, nice shoot, son. What's your name? It's like,
and then, Murphy. Bam, RoboCop.
Now, right, that's the ending. So, what they did film is they filmed additional scenes, which is Robocop visiting Lewis in hospital and all that sort of shit. But then when Paul Hogan like watched the cut together, he was like, "No, that's the ending. It's just like it's too big a pop."
Yeah.
It's like, it's just like, oh yeah, what's your name, Murphy? It's like, no, bam, credits. That's the movie. That's the end of it.
Absolutely great shout, because I don't then need to see him reconciling, and you find out like the Lewis side sequel or blah 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 blah. You know, it's what's your name, Murphy? Robocop. Bam. It's just and I think that's what makes this film so good is, and I said at the beginning, like, oh, I don't know why this is a good movie, but it's a good movie. One of the main reasons this is a good movie is because it doesn't dwell. It doesn't stick around.
Yes. I feel like as we're now wrapping up and giving our final thoughts, you know, when you sound like, I just feel like I sound like such an old man by saying they just don't make movies like this anymore. And it's fairly well paced, apart from obviously, you know, we say
that one scene,
the sort of that one scene. It's just, it's very good tongue in cheek, and it's very like, you know, sort of you know, satirical, but it's not beating you over the head with it. Do you know what I mean? It's just like it gives into some, you know, you might say, like, if this was released now, like, some detractors would say, oh, it's a bit woke with some of the messages behind it. You know what I mean? I don't really like using the word woke. But it, you know, just to convey the sort of the ideas, and, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, it's about gentrification. So it's like, yeah, but they're happening right in the background. And if you didn't pay attention, you don't kind of really get the subject matter of that movie. You can just enjoy it on the surface level, and just, if anything, ignore all that. But it's a deeper movie, and when on the glossy surface, it's about a robot that blows the shit out of things, and you're just like, you're like, cool, awesome action movie.
Yeah.
But then underneath it, there's actually like good social commentary, and it's just done so well that I feel that modern writers and directors would look at a movie like that and try to replicate it and try to you know, sort of capture that, but just fall so flat. It's just I feel like that movie can only really be made in that sort of era.
That's it. I mean? And it's the same with a lot of movies made around that time. Like, how do you remake Die Hard? Well, the secret answer is you can't. And how do you
Or like, you know, Paul Verhoeven's Total Recall.
How do you redo Alien? Secret answer, you just can't.
Yeah, why?
You can't, because audiences now don't afford you the time to take the time to get to know and like the character. If he's not Robocop by 10 to 15 minutes in, fuck you, your movie sucks, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. But that's why I said how much I love the idea that the whole delayed reveal of him. I feel now.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like people love and respect to go, oh, yeah, that's the way to do it. But don't do it again. If you take that time again, you can go fuck yourself. And it's like, no, guys, take it back a second. You had it right with the first thing. Get rid of the second thing. But no. I mean, the amount of times I've been in meetings and someone said to me, something needs to happen by 10 minutes, something like the character, if you're writing this thing about this fucking thing, this serial killer, you need to see that serial killer within 10 minutes. I'm like, well, you know, Silence of the Lambs takes its time, but okay. I guess we don't want to emulate the greats.
But then on the counterpoint, you look at someone like Scream, which is, you know, within the, you know, the first like opening scene.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's always going to be an argument for or against, but what I'm hearing more and more is like, you know, you can't do it the way that really works. And it's like, in Get Out, it really does take its time before you're like, oh, I see, mind manipulation control or whatever. But once it happens, like, it takes 40 minutes or something before he gets hypnotized, and it nails it.
Yeah.
I know you don't care for Get Out particularly, but you know, it isn't like, oh, hey, welcome to our home, by the way,
it
mind control
itself.
It takes its time and it works. This movie takes its time and it works. And more importantly, like, is it better than Terminator? We've said before that we'll have the debate, and maybe we will. Not right now.
Better than Terminator 1.
I'm going to have to rewatch Terminator 1 to do a fair comparison.
Maybe not, but definitely hard. I think because Terminator 2 is just... It is just the best action movie of all time.
Yeah, but we know the best time travel movie is Hot Tub Time Machine. We discovered this in our rugby chat the other day.
Oh, mate, he said it's like there's someone said that. What did he say? There's no good time travel movie.
See, something.
It was like something time cop, and I was just like, hang on.
I was Hot Tub Time Machine. You were Terminator 2.
One of the best movies made of all time.
But speaking of time, RoboCop runs at 1:42. We have been speaking for 1:43. With edits, I can maybe fit us in under the wire. But this has been the Adam McRae's Guilty Pleasure Cinema Podcast on RoboCop. He has been Adam Irving Craig. We are on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Adam McRae's Guilty Pleasure Cinema.
It's not called Twitter anymore.
Threads, X, we're on stuff. Hey, I don't keep up with social trends. We are on Spotify, iTunes, and all other major streaming apps. And if you like, you could give us some of your sweet, sweet... Hey, if you want to buy us for $1, we're on Patreon. But until then, we're
for free.
Next, yeah, $3.
$3.
But next week we will, you know what? Screw it. Let's talk about RoboCop 2.
Yeah, we could do that.
I'm in the mood for a bad movie, so let's do RoboCop 2.
Or we could do Dog Soldiers.
Go on then. Dog Soldiers was
actually meant to be in our first ever season.
That sounds
about
right for us. Hey, it's only been 4 years. Yeah. But otherwise, Adam, it's been a pleasure.
It's always a pleasure talking to you, Craig.
See you next week.
Stay out of trouble.
Nice.